Bismillah, in the name of God. Why me? The Prophet Abraham was not a stranger to pains and suffering and evils throughout his life. His people subjected him to all manners of tests and trials. They harmed him, they mocked him, they boycotted him, they rejected his message. And what was his message? His message was, in essence, monotheism, or believing in and worshipping one God. Now, we've all suffered in our lives. We've all experienced some kind of pain or suffering or loss. Some kind of agony has affected us all. You've all suffered, you've all experienced this. So you may be experiencing it now at some point in your life. It could be an illness, it could be minor. Perhaps you had a flu recently or something like that. You had a very bad sore throat, something that caused you discomfort. It could be something more drastic, something more chronic. Perhaps you have a lifelong illness, something that affects you in your day-to-day life, something more harmful. It could be, for example, a heart condition, something chronic. Or you may have heard of someone that's passed away. Perhaps in your family, someone has died recently and there's been a loss and a heartache and this devastation caused between the loved ones in your family. There could be a different type of pain or suffering, perhaps some kind of financial calamity where your business has taken a downturn. You've gone from a good state of wealth to poverty, perhaps a job loss, a loss of contract. Some kind of pain and suffering is in your life. We've all experienced it. We're all experiencing it. It happens, it moves, it comes in roundabouts, it travels around. There's a good day, a bad day. So we all experience suffering. However, Abraham was a patient prophet, and he embraced these trials and tests. He never gave up upon monotheism or worshipping one God. In fact, his trials came to a point where his people, due to their dislike of his message, they planned and they plotted. In fact, what they did was something very gruesome. They got together and they created a huge fire. So they gathered so much fuel, wood, etc. They put it all together, and their plan was to literally burn Abraham the prophet alive. I mean, you can imagine the hideous, painful death of dying in a fire, your skin burning. It's one of the worst ways a person could possibly leave the world. So they gathered all the fuel, they gathered all the equipment they needed, and in fact the fire was so vast, so great and powerful and hot that they couldn't even get close enough to push him in. So they got a catapult and they put him in it and they thrust him through the air, they catapulted him into the center of the fire to burn him alive. Now, our purpose in life is worship, just like the Prophet Abraham. We're here to worship one all-powerful, almighty, all-loving, creator being. We can call him God. And from this, we understand as worshippers that life is not just for transitory pleasures alone. There's a deeper spiritual meaning or purpose, which is to actualize inner peace by worshipping God. And, you know, God, from his generosity, rewards in a twofold way, as he mentions in his book, the Quran, that he rewards in this life and the life to come, the next life. So when we die, we're resurrected. So the next reward would be paradise, which is an amazing utopia. It's a life of just bliss and pleasures. There's no death. You live forever. Anything you wish for, you're granted it. There's no lowly actions or ill feelings like jealousy, rancor, hatred. All of it is eradicated and you live in total bliss, pleasure and peace with the creator of the heavens and the universe and all your family and friends that you want around you. Now, that's the primary purpose, therefore, is worship for the human beings. Now, let's imagine or put into context somebody that went through life with no suffering at all, no pains, no loss, no missing a loved one, no family member passing away, and they went through life completely like that, in this state of total happiness, you could say. In this case, it would be very easy and very probable that God would be out of that person's life, out of the picture, and the worship wouldn't exist. So the primary purpose of existence would not be actualized. Conversely, if we see somebody and they go through trials, they go through sufferings and pains and losses, as you may be feeling yourself, they go through these hardships, but it brings them back to the remembrance or the worship of God. So they turned to him as the sole cure for these problems. So what would happen with the second person is that the actual purpose, which is worship, becomes actualized. So the overall reason for our creation is actualized. And God talks about this in the Quran, in a verse in the Quran. God says, I did not create the jinn, like a spirit world, or mankind, except to worship me alone. So we are told what our purpose is. It's not a mystery. We know our purpose in life is to worship the creator, the uncreated creator of the heavens and the universe, the one that made it all happen, the one that's made it all possible. And further, we concur, we believe as worshippers that life is a test. It's an examination ground for all people, for all of mankind. And the evil and suffering is part of that test. God says in the Quran that he created death and life so that he may put you to test to find out which of you is best in deeds. He is the Almighty, the Forgiving. So the world as it's functioning and as we understand it and perceive it is not meant to be an arena of, or sorry, it is meant to be an arena of trials and tests. To basically, it's to test our conduct. It's an arena of trials and tests. There will be tests, there'll be hardships, there'll be trials. It's to test our conduct and effectively cultivate virtue within mankind to bring about a good. And this is very important, as God further says in the Quran, and he does not approve for his servants disbelief. So what does this mean? What does this verse in the Quran mean? Well, in essence, God doesn't wish or hope for mankind not to enter his paradise. God's aim and overall wish is for all of mankind to enter the paradise, the place that I described of total bliss and pleasures, the ultimate end goal destination. God wishes for us to all go there. He doesn't wish to punish anyone, and he gets nothing from punishing anyone anyway. So a further saying of our prophet is that when God loves a servant, he tests him. So we understand that when we are going through suffering, when we are going through these trials and tests, this is a sign of God's divine love. And it's all part of his mercy. You know, the harder the test, the harder the trial, the more good deeds, and the more love is actually there, the more divine love. And, you know, one may look at further parts of the Quran and see things. For example, God says, do you suppose that you will enter paradise without first having suffered like those before you? They were afflicted by misfortune and hardship, and they were so shaken that even their messenger and the believers with him cried, when will God's help arrive? Truly, God's help is near. So you may be going through suffering, and we sympathize as fellow human beings, as worshippers. We open our hearts to the pain and the suffering in the world. We never say any of it is good. We don't embrace evil. We would like to eradicate evil. But we know that the people, such as the prophets, such as Abraham, Moses, Jacob, and so on, the prophets of the past, they were tested at the highest degree. And it got to the point where one could say they were close to despairing. Obviously, they didn't despair. They knew, they believed in God and worshipped him. But they were close to despairing, and they cried out, when is God's help going to come? And indeed, God's help is near. He's the most merciful, the most kind. Now, another question or another situation exists where God has incorporated or put into us a divine mechanism of mercy, if you like, which is that he doesn't test the soul more than what it can bear. So God does say that in the Quran. He says that God does not burden any soul with more than it can bear. So we have an inbuilt capability or mechanism to potentially pass all the tests and all the suffering that may come to us. We have the inbuilt potential to pass these trials, to be patient and ride them out and get through them, even though on the outset they may look severe and we may be tested to extremes, etc. But we do have that capability of passing these tests. Now, if we look at good and evil, bad and suffering and these sort of things, if we put things in a very sort of blunt or simplistic term, if there was no evil, we wouldn't know what good is. So in this regard, things, and it's an Islamic saying that things are known by their polar opposites. So, you know, we know hot from cold and these sort of opposites. And likewise, if we look at some examples, if there were no people poor or starving, then where would the people of generosity be? So on the outset, it looks like evil is this pervading force that's taken over the world and causing destruction. But in it, you know, the cup is half full. And likewise, if there was no orphans, where would the kindness be for the poor orphans, the people that need kindness? And from this, we conclude in Islam that there are only two situations. There's only either absolute good or a mix of good and evil. We don't believe in the concept of pure or absolute evil. God isn't a malicious being just striking down punishments across the whole of the earth for no reason and for cruelty. Now, the question might arise, why is life, or why is there a test? So God, he does wish for us to all to go to paradise. However, we have different characters or different people throughout history and throughout life. You see them in your own lives. You have good neighbors. You may have someone that's a bit of a, like a yob, or someone a bit rude or something like that, someone a bit more of a harsh character. And this is how life is. There's good and bad. And we have somebody like Hitler, for example. Adolf Hitler was an extreme of evil in terms of character. He killed 6 million Jews. He gassed and murdered men, women and children, all innocent. He killed them all. And, you know, he did immense, gratuitous evil. He was very bad. And then we have the pharaohs. And then we have the good people as well. Jesus, the prophet. We have Moses. We have good folk in society. Mother Teresa, she did so much good. There's the good and the bad. And if God was just to say, OK, we'll send everyone to paradise, the good and the bad, this, you know, without any test or without a mechanism which is based on merit to see who's going to enter the paradise, this would be gross injustice. And God by no means is unjust or unjust. God is the just. It's one of his names and attributes. And this links back to worship. You know, knowing who God is part of this worship that the monotheist carries out. So we know who God is. We know his names, his attributes, the just, the wise, the all-powerful. We obey him, so we follow his commands, we keep away from his prohibitions. We love him, we cherish him, we revere him as the most greatest thing, and we single out all our actions for him. So worship is the core essence, and part of this comes in with the test. It's all one complete package there. Now, we see that, you know, we do see a lot of evil, we do see a lot of suffering, but, you know, you might have somebody in your life, you may have heard a story, it could be in your immediate family, someone gets a severe illness, something devastating and heartbreaking, cancer, for example, strikes a close family friend or a neighbour, you have a little child and they're going through the trauma and the pains of a cancer, it's not curing, they're doing chemotherapy. Something like this goes on and all you see is an innocent being, just a four-year-old child, and she goes through hell and high water in this earth. Well, we have to contextualize and understand that, you know, a person may sort of come forward and say, well, okay, if your creator being, the thing you worship and revere, if he is the all-powerful and the all-merciful, then why does he allow this to happen? Like, for example, if he's the all-powerful, why doesn't he just give her a cure? You know, you can do it in an instance, just cure the cancer. Likewise, if he's the all-merciful, well, why did he not show mercy? Why did he just inflict a four-year-old girl with cancer in the first place? Isn't it just cruelty? The way we see this in Islam is quite clear and there's no confusion. We understand that God is not like a one-dimensional or two-dimensional being. God is very rich. In fact, one of his names is the Rich. He's powerful, he's kind, he's loving, and he has many names and attributes. There's a whole plethora, a long list of different names and attributes that make up who he is. So he's a kind, loving being of all might and power. Now, one of his names is the All-Wise. So he has the totality of wisdom. He has divine wisdom. We, as human beings, as worshippers, as humans on the earth, we've got a wisdom which is limited. You know, we have limited functions and capabilities. We're limited beings. Our sight, for example, is limited. We can only see so far. But God sees and hears everything, and his wisdom encompasses everything. So, with the four-year-old girl, she's suffering. Chemotherapy's not working. We're all crying. We do cry out and feel pain. We empathize. We sympathize. We do our best. We look for the best medicine, best doctors. We come forth and try to bring the best help. We do our prayers. We comfort the child and the family. But at the end of the day, God has got the complete picture. We've only got the pixel or snapshot instance of what's happening in that time instance. You know, the bigger picture, why she got the cancer, the full wisdom behind it, it will never or may never come into our comprehension. So we may never know why she was inflicted, what was the reason. And, you know, in one fact of it, in our tradition, in Islam, we do believe that any child that does happen to die, so anybody that dies before puberty, they immediately enter paradise anyway. So there is a divine love as well there connected. And I'll go on in a little while to explain more about this sort of divine love and entry into paradise. We'll see other examples of God's divine love, His mercy and His goodness. Now, I wanted to talk a little bit about knowing God. So say, for example, you get a minor illness. You've got a cold or a flu. Obviously, you yourself feel it's the worst thing on the earth. The throat is clammed up. You're sweaty. You've got a fever, high temperature, and all the bad effects. Now, you go through, you normally, when you get the flu, you've got it for a good 4 to 6 weeks. But at this time, you try something different. And maybe you could try this yourself, but you try something new. You try calling upon the Creator, the one that the Muslims worship, the Creator, the God. You call upon Him alone. You ask Him, oh most powerful, oh most loving, I have the flu. Please remove it from me. I mean, I urge you to try this yourselves. Give it a try. Test it out. See at a time when you're going through suffering, give this little acid test, give it a little try and see what happens. And let's say in this case, the flu leaves you very quickly. From this, a worshipper would come to the conclusion or the realization that God alone is the one that heals. He is the healer. And this is one of His attributes of divine healing. He can cure any of His creation from any illness. And this suffering or evil, which on the outset looks very bad, it looks like it has no meaning or something is very drastic, something very wrong and evil, it brings about a goodness of knowledge, of knowing who the Creator is, knowing that He's there, that He hears you, He hears your prayers, He loves you and He cures you, and you actualize and feel and see this effect in your life, and it gives you more stronger faith. Another quick example could be, for example, you're in a state of fear or panic, where somebody's trying to harm you, perhaps you're in a high street, someone's trying to take your money, a mugger or something awful like that takes place, and you, in the panic and the mayhem, you cry out in your heart, maybe just even silently, God help me, protect me, help me from these bad people. And then they're apprehended by some other shoppers, they run away, they flee, they you know, the cowards at the end of the day, they run away. This would bring about knowledge that God and God alone is the protector. And in Islam, this is another one of His names, the protector, the divine protector. And His protection, we have to understand, like all His names and attributes, is maximally perfect. It has no flaws, there's no imperfections. So when God has these qualities, they have no defects and they're to the ultimate level of perfection. Now, a further aspect of evil and pain and suffering is that pain and suffering, or evil and good, are not at static equal levels. So for example, we could have something called a first level or first order evil. Okay, this could be physical pain and stuff like that. And a first level good, this could be something like physical pleasure. Then second to these, we have the second order good, for example, which is something like courage, generosity, humbleness, other qualities, and they stem or emanate from the first level evil. So again, it's a case of the orphan and the poor folk. Without these certain things there in the beginning, the other thing doesn't result. And God makes an interesting point in the Quran. He says, bad cannot be likened to good, though you may be dazzled by how abundant the bad is. Be mindful of God, people of understanding, so that you may prosper. So we have to understand as believers, as worshippers, that good and evil are by no means equal. They are a completely different thing in terms of their weight. And what God does for us as worshippers is that if we do one good deed, we get several hundred good rewards written down for that good deed. If we do one bad act, a sin, for example, we get one bad deed written down. So our scales are always getting heavily weighed, or so we hope and strive for. That, you know, through God's mercy and wisdom, He wishes for us to enter the paradise, as I mentioned earlier. So we're on that path to paradise. and he wishes it to be easy for us and an easy entry. So good and equal, even though in life we may see umpteen amounts of evil, huge abundance of evil, people doing so many wrongs, we see wars, killings, murder, wanton destruction, all this kind of evil and bad things going on, we have to understand that good is a more powerful force and it outweighs and is more heavy in God's sight than evil. And we shouldn't just therefore go towards evil. As I mentioned earlier, we wish to eradicate evil. We want to wipe out evil in all its forms. Now, some spiritual perspectives. So we have this God, he's all loving, he's all powerful, he's all merciful. But sometimes we may not fully appreciate or even comprehend the extent of his mercy and his divine love. God, in a way, he can almost, in inverted commas, he can press a fast forward button, and whoever he chooses, he can send them to a paradise. Like I mentioned, the four-year-old child with cancer, any child that dies immediately enters or has the end destination of paradise. But there's a shortcut, as I say, the fast forward button, and this is the death of a martyr. So for example, a woman in labor. The woman, as she's giving birth, you know, you may have a family member that's gone through that. You may have a family, your wife may have given birth. The woman goes through pains and agonies to give birth to the child. It's very traumatic for all people. You know, the husband, if he's there in the room, it's very moving and it's very difficult. And there's crying and there's tears, there's pain. And the woman, there's a chance that she can die in this whole childbirth. There's a probability or a possibility that she can pass away due to the labor complications. She may die. Now, if this happens, in Islam we believe that the woman immediately and instantly is admitted to God's paradise. So she's granted that paradise. It's an immediate gift that the person's given. So on the outset, again, it looks like something a little bit bad or very bad. It looks like somebody died and there was a death, etc. But the overall result is something, you know, beyond our imagination. The lady shall enter paradise immediately and instantly she'll be granted that final destination reward of total bliss and happiness. Further, if the child was to also, perhaps there was a complication and the child died as well, or died on its own, whatever the case, as I did touch upon, the child itself will enter paradise as well. Now, there are many other examples of this in Islam. The death with a fast forward button is pressed. For example, fire. Anyone dying in a fire, something that's obviously on the outset is very tragic. But if they all die, the people in a fire, for example, a house fire, and that's the way that their life ends, they'll all immediately and instantly enter paradise. Drowning. We saw the tsunami a few years ago where thousands of people drowned. Is it a cruel God? Is it a malicious God? Well, for the worshipper, they immediately and instantly enter the paradise. Further examples are plagues, somebody dying from a stomach illness, so an illness that emanates from the stomach. If that's how the person passes away, they get the death of the martyr. And anybody that's murdered, again, they have that same death. Now, there's a prophetic saying. Our prophet, Muhammad, peace be upon him, he said that no calamity befalls a believer but that God expiates some of his sins because of it, even though it were the prick he receives from a thorn. So sometimes we have this suffering and we may feel it's doing no good, you know, but our belief as worshippers is that even if we're scratched, even if we get a little pinprick, a needle, that little bit of pain that you feel with just the one drop of blood, that is recompensed. God wipes out some of our sins. So again, his divine love and mercy is emanating and he wants us to reach the paradise. It's beauty in itself. Further, amazing is the affair of the believer. Verily, all of his affair is good, and this is for no one except the believer. If something of good or happiness befalls him, he is grateful, and that is good for him. If something of harm befalls him, he is patient, and that is good for him. So look at this situation now. We have a worshipper, somebody that will be calling upon the one Lord, the one God alone, the Creator, and his prayer, should it be answered in that context, he would get an increase in blessings. For example, he gets an increase in wealth, family, goodness, health, all the good things that people strive for. He gets an increase in those things. Now, if that happens, The worshipper thanks his Lord. He thanks God and he's grateful for it and he's rewarded greatly for that. He gets a very heavy good reward for that. Conversely, if he's going through some sort of suffering, we mentioned some of the illnesses, he contracts some sort of major chronic illness, but he's patient and he's cured. But during the time of hardship, if he's patient, he's rewarded for his patience. So again, for the worshipper, it's a win-win situation and the cup is always half full. Now, you know, we all wish to actually get to a utopia. We all wish paradise. And, you know, what happened with Abraham on the outset, as I mentioned in the beginning, it looked like a very traumatic thing. He's catapulted through the air, flung through the sky. He's going to land in this blazing giant bonfire. Huge destruction is going to take place. Well, what actually happened was, as he flew through the air, he was flying through the air, and he came down and landed in the fire, God caused the fire to cool right down. So it was safe. It was actually safe and cooling. And he was not actually burnt. He didn't burn in the fire. So God's mercy prevailed. And Abraham was patient and he was saved. So the situation on the outset looked bad and looked like he's going to go through suffering. But the good ending is that God saved him. And I end by saying to the people listening, to you guys listening, that, you know, I pray and hope that you're guided to worship and God, it becomes part of your life and that ultimately you do enter the paradise. You know, God wishes it for all mankind to enter paradise. And this is the place where somebody who in this world, they went through the most amount of suffering, you know, he's the guy or the man or the woman that suffered the most. They saw the most trials and tests. They saw the most amount of evil, incomparable to other folk. So this is the heaviest amount. That person, he will be dipped for just an instance into the paradise. And he'll be removed. And God, his creator, will ask him, did you see or experience any suffering in the worldly life on the planet Earth? And the reply will be no. Thank you for listening.